Hey, got the morning show with Aaron, and in the studio I got Robs. Good morning.
Good morning.
You've been connecting with nature. I just saw on Facebook that you spent a night somewhere in the bush.
Yeah.
Probably not very far away.
Nah, doesn't need to be. No.
And your shelter, describe your shelter for that.
Well, it was on Friday.
I mean, it's December, so it's not that.
Yeah, it wasn't. Well, tough. There was no wind at all on Friday. It was a very clear, beautiful night.
Okay.
And definitely, like, it's not warm. It gets cold at night when it's light up.
Yeah, you're clear.
It was chilly, but the bush holds the temperature a little bit, so it would be a bit warmer in the bush than out of it on a night like that.
Yeah.
Describe my shelter. It was a pile of ferns on the ground, and there was a fallen down carnuka log, which I was kind of snuggling up against. So I've got a bit of something like a wall on one side of me to reflect heat.
Yeah.
Back to me. Yeah, it was good. It's good. It's been a while since.
And a fire.
A little fire on my side.
Did you keep it going all night?
Let some embers go. Yeah. But we're kind of getting into that season when it's time to not do that.
Not yet. You want to stay awake while there's fire going?
Yeah. I mean, you know, the way we do it, the ground never gets hot, because I think you've seen how we do those fires, and you kind of build an island, you stack it up.
Yeah.
So the actual, I mean, the danger is embers, but there's certain woods might throw embers out, certain ones don't, so knowing that.
Yeah.
And obviously sort of dead roots smouldering underground, but as long as the ground never gets hot, that's never...
Okay.
Never going to be a danger.
That's the strategy. And I know, but I haven't seen any fire warnings out yet. It was a bit too early for that.
But yeah.
They'll be coming, no doubt,
yeah,
this year.
Yeah, yeah. But no, it's totally on my agenda of care and finding alternatives to fire through the summer season.
Yeah. Well, I mean, summer provides its own alternative, doesn't it? Eventually it gets just too warm enough.
Yeah, but there's not many nights that you'd comfortably sleep outside without any cover, you know, any blankets or anything. There's a few nights you can do that when it gets quite muggy and humid, but generally speaking, the clear nights, you won't sleep a whole heap.
Yeah. All right, so you wanted to talk about navigation this morning?
Yeah, I guess in the absence of fire and other more practical aspects of nature craft over the summer season, it's a time where I like to challenge my navigation skills. So I'll be doing quite a few missions over summer.
Are you going to try and get lost?
There's different ways. I mean, just being in the bush and having that intention and awareness of the four directions at all times, but... I'll be doing things like maybe doing a 2 or 3 day mission and looking at a map and finding a start point and an end point, which are pretty much due east-west of each other, or north-south, but,
yeah,
you know, sort of in line, and not using a compass and walking for a few days and seeing how close I can get to my target destination by, using nature's signs to navigate with.
Mm. Have you done this specific thing before?
Yep. Yeah, something I practiced for a few years.
How close do you get? Have you got in the past?
I mean, I do pretty well. I'm round about, but it's the times where you don't get it right, you know, where you do find, and which teach you the most, you know, because it's the reflection of it and sort of knowing, where did I get misguided, and what signs did I miss, or what signs did I misread? Like with all things in nature connection, really, it's not so much the destination, but the actual experience of doing it and the growth. And it's not all about navigation. It's a great way to connect with the trees in at a different level, because the way the trees will grow is what you're really paying attention to, or one of the things.
Just so we can put it in context, like, how many kilometres would you have been walking?
Like, if I do a 2 or 3 days, it might be, like, I don't know, 20 kilometres? Like,
okay.
I go slow, and, you know, I'm never on a mission.
And how far off target are you on a good day?
Over a couple of days.
Or you're on a good trip, yeah, when you think you've done well.
In distance, I don't really know. In time, an hour. if I've gone off quite a bit. Well,
how many degrees of the compass would you say you are?
I'm trying
to get some stats.
5 degrees or something, but it's not.
Okay.
It's not.
I know you don't think like this, but I know
people. I don't think like this, no.
People are like, I'm very visual and I've got the plan. I'm looking at the plan and I'm like, you started here and you went there and how far off target were you?
The thing is with the New Zealand bush, especially, you know, around here, it's probably one of the hardest places on the planet to navigate through in this way.
I would have thought so, yeah.
You know, the density of the bush, but it's so up and down and so damp, you know, there's so many streams and streams, you know, because you got the up and down, the light is, you know, it's always changing, the light that the trees have access to.
Yeah.
Really throws you off, and because there's water everywhere, water's another strong force that dictates how a tree will grow its shape.
So the plants are growing toward the light.
Generally. Which isn't to the north. That's in the north if it's one tree and a paddock.
Yeah.
You know, because it's not compromised by the light around it.
Or a pot plant by a window.
Yeah, but in the bush you got trees like, you know, all the rimus and miros and the conifers and rewa who like to grow above the canopy. They stick their heads out. So if you can find a window in the canopy to get a good view of that, you know, but again, if it's on a slope, then it's compromised and it's not necessarily going to give you a true reading anyway. So it's super challenging to do it on this such dense and hilly ground. But I love a challenge, you know, and it doesn't matter if I'm miles off. It doesn't matter. It's not a win-lose thing. It's just a great way for me to experience the bush and try and understand why nature is nature, why it makes these decisions and grows how it grows, and further that journey for myself.
So is it only those tall trees that get up above the canopy that you're looking at, or are there other things that you're looking at?
No, everything. And, you know, if you stick to what you know, you're limiting yourself to, you know, the potential, you know, so much information out there. Which probably a lot that humans haven't even figured out yet, you know? Things that, patterns that happen in nature, which we either haven't figured out or we've lost and forgotten. So I'm just curious, you know? I'm working with a very curious mind, just trying to see any patterns at all, you know? People use lichens and mosses and plants, flowers, you know, now's a good time for flowers because, you know, Pohutukawa's just gone in bloom, for example, and you'll notice the first flowers will be growing on the north side of the tree, or the light side of the tree, I should say.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's true in fall as well with deciduous trees. They'll start going yellow and gold on the northern side first. So, lots of different patterns out there to try and decipher, and it's a lot of fun getting into the bush with that real strong intention to look really closely and with that lens of navigation.
We should say too for listeners that, like, I joke about you getting lost in the bush, but you are quite skilled at getting out of places. I might have asked you this question before, but could we blindfold you, get a helicopter and dump you somewhere?
That's my plan for my 40th birthday.
Is it?
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
It's coming. I'm 38 now, 38 and a half, so
and see, I'll be coming see if up you soon. Can, see if you can get out.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, there's something. You might not want to be in Fiordland, because even if you could find your way out, it's a hell of a long way to anywhere with a road or an electricity.
Yeah, I mean... Yeah, I don't know if my intent... I mean, it might be to try and find my way out. But, I don't know. I think that would be such a rare opportunity for me actually just being blindfolded and dropped somewhere. It would be nice to be to land without any goal, you know? And, yeah, maybe I'd decide, like, oh, I want to keep moving and see if I can find something. Or maybe I'd just feel like, oh, I'm really happy being here. I'm just going to stay here for a few weeks and... You know, okay. It's kind of listening to myself and listening to my environment around me is when I tend to get the richest experiences. You're right. So getting lost isn't really part of my vocabulary, really. You know, the concept of lust.
I guess I just wanted to reassure people that you weren't endangering yourself a little bit by taking these trips where you're trying to go due north or due south.
No. I mean, with an amount of knowledge, I think, in New Zealand as well, you know, it's easy enough to feel pretty safe in the bush as long as you're not hurt, as long as you're really careful, which is another key aspect of it, which, you know, that care, you know, being barefoot, you know, if you stand on something sharp or slip and fall somewhere, then it's a very different story.
Should you wear boots then?
No, because I think for me, I mean, you've done a night walk with me. It's,
yeah.
You know, it takes away from the experience in a way, and part of the teaching is learning how to walk, you know?
Yeah.
And
so back to a thing about figuring out where north is while you're walking. I suspect, like, you're gathering, obviously one of the first things you work out is that the flowers are on the north side. And then the tall trees, like you've named a few obvious things. It must get to the point where you build up lots of little bits of knowledge like that, and it becomes internalized,
yeah,
that you stop consciously reading all those things, and you just kind of know.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and then you just walk. So, yeah, initially it takes some effort, you know, to logically sort of register your observations. But after doing it for a while, that happens more subconsciously, and you just walk. And the less you think about it, the more accurate you seem to get, and you sort of tune into, you know, what I'd say is a more, the more animal mind, you know, of knowing that.
The
and there's so many things, and there's anchors. I mean, you know, a valley generally doesn't have too many turns in it, you know, so that can be an anchor. If you've got a stream, you've got a stream, and it can be in the distance, but that can be an anchor that you'll know it's going to be fairly true. Clouds don't change direction too quickly.
Yeah.
You know, if there's a big front coming in, well, even with a big front, it's not an immediate. So if you've got some clouds and you've got some movement in the sky, that can be an anchor. So if you do have a reference point and you know how the clouds, you know, fit into that reference point, then you can keep watching the clouds, and that can be a guide. Obviously, stars at night time, if you're doing some night walking and it's clear. I mean, aeroplanes, you know, a lot of the aeroplanes, a lot of the sky traffic's going to be heading to Auckland or from Auckland.
Yeah.
If they're lower down, they might be, and less frequent, they might be landing in Hamilton. So, you know, that's sort of reference points as well, where you can...
Yeah.
Well,
I've flown a plane from Nelson to Auckland, and it goes almost, well, the one I went on was almost straight over Raglan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, birds, flight paths, certain birds, you know, depending where you are, sort of knowing where the bodies of water are, where, you know, estuaries and things, where certain bird species might be heading.
There is a thing about that subconscious knowledge. When you're driving toward the coast from a long way inland, and suddenly you can tell that you're close, and I don't know what it is. I mean, there's no big mountains or ridges in the distance, but there's a feel, and I feel it, and I don't know. And I'm in a car, like I'm surrounded myself by technology. I'm still picking that up.
Yeah.
There's something
sometimes
that
even,
you know.
Sometimes even a smell. I remember when I was young, we didn't go to the coast very often because I'm from an industrial city right in the centre of England.
Yeah.
And, we didn't go to the coast much, but I remember the smell when we did go, you know, just through the windows when we were kind of getting close.
Yeah.
Sort of salty, fishy smell.
Yeah.
remembers. But I guess the most obvious thing as well, which we haven't even mentioned, is the sun. And I find it quite boring when the sun's shining because...
It's no challenge.
It's a bit easy.
What, have you got a watch or you're using that?
No, I don't bring a watch.
I guess you're not looking for pinpoint accuracy in all this.
No, as close as you are, as much as you can do. And you know, obviously there's the difference between magnetic north and true north as well, so you know, if you were using a compass, you're going to be a few degrees off anyway if you're actually following the magnetic north, whereas obviously the sun and nature doesn't use magnetic north as much. It's more the true north because it's dictated by where the sun is.
Yeah, well, even that will vary. Well, it doesn't vary, but I was going to say, if you're using a watch, it would vary because it depends where you are within your actual time zone.
Mm.
Like the East Coast and the West Coast have different sunsets and sunrises. And
Yeah.
The sun's in a slightly different place at midday.
Yep.
Or at all times.
Yep.
But yeah.
And the moon as well, you know, where the moon rises and sets varies through the year, and that can be another reference that you can use, and along with the stars. But I guess it's, you know, you don't need to be in the bush. It's even wherever you're sat right now, just trying to challenge yourself and ask you which way is north right now, you know. I mean, if you're somewhere familiar, you've probably got a good idea, but if you're not, it's just a good little game to play.
I usually know where it is, but there have been places in the world, like around in the North Island, where I've been where I suddenly lose it. I had a friend place near somewhere out of Huntley on a farm, and I used to drive there, and I completely I'd lose my sense of north in that one place. I don't really know why. A very strange experience.
Yeah. But again, when you lose it, that's the fun bit. And just being aware, having awareness of what you're actually looking for and what questions you're asking yourself in trying to figure out.
And why did it happen? What were the clues that I subconsciously picked up that put me wrong?
Yeah. And when you just go through those little fun processes, it's just quite a good way to throw a few threads of connection to the natural world around you, which feels good, you know. I guess ultimately that's why I do what I do, because it feels healthy and wholesome, and, you know, only makes me feel good about who I am and what I do.
So we're talking about going due north or due south. Can I tell you to go 37 degrees off north? And I mean,
you could try. I mean, I'd want something.
You know,
normally, so if I'm in the bush and I'm looking for signs, you know, I'd want as many as I can. You know, if I just get one reference point, then I'm not going to be feeling that confident. But if there's a few different plants or a few different signs that are all pointing in the same direction, then I'm going to follow that a bit stronger. But I'll usually draw in the ground with a stick. I'll place a couple of sticks to make my little cross for the compass.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And then just as I'm finding more signs, I'll just shift that. So once I got that, I can kind of, you know, add any degree to that and follow that path.
Famously, there's the story about people getting lost in the bush who end up walking around in circles, coming back to the spot they were.
I mean,
that's a bit of a trope on TV and film.
But
I imagine actually in the New Zealand bush, because we talked about how steep and all that and hilly it is, that actually would be pretty challenging just to do a proper circle even by accident.
Do you think so? If you're lost, you'd know if you've gone lower than you were trying to. If you're actually trying to get out somewhere, then you know, it's more likely you're going to be following a ridge or a stream, in which case you're not going to be going in circles so much.
Yeah.
But
I guess this is like places where it's really flat for hundreds of miles.
Yeah, not so much.
Like Saskatchewan.
Yeah, well, if I put you on the rugby fields right now, I think I've said this to you before, and put a blindfold on you and asked you to walk from underneath one goal to the end and try and walk in a straight line to the opposite goal with a blindfold on, you probably wouldn't get halfway without walking off the rugby pitch.
Off the side.
Yeah, so if you carry on walking, obviously you're going to pretty much end up back where you started. You'll have done a full circle, and some people will go to the left, some people will go to the right. And that'll be most times that'll be your direction. And there's a bit of talk, I think back in the 60s, as far back as then, they were trying to figure out what it was. And some people thought if you're left-handed, you go left. If you're right-handed, you go right, which was a neurological thing, I guess. But then if you're right-handed, you got a slightly stronger right side, which is more muscle mass. So there's an imbalance in your body.
Oh, okay.
Which could influence it. Most people have one limb slightly longer than the other, which could influence it. The lay of the land, certain things that are pulling you. You know, if the sun's on one side, the heat might influence you and pull you or push you away.
But you could actually use the sun to know that you've got off target.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. Well, that's
like, and I'm thinking too about that rugby field. Like, it's in a valley, and I know that it's open. If we started on where I'm facing now, which no one else can see, but off to the left is where the sea is.
Yeah.
And off to the right is the valley, and
that's what we'd call
steep hills behind us. I think I would hear things slightly differently.
Yeah.
Just the background noises.
Yeah, yeah.
And if Chris Meek was building something at a studio, then we could use those sounds.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you call that in the natural navigation realm, we call that a handrail.
Right.
So that's something, you know, less intuitive, but something that you can, as a handrail, you know, just you're using to follow. It might be the wind touching your face, and you just keep that on the same side of your face, or a sound, and you know, night walks, I've often used the sound of the waves to just keep myself on a straight line. And
I feel like knowing where the open, like in the valley where the open end was, where the sea was, I feel there would be some intuition in that, like I would just know, but not quite sure what I'm picking up.
Yeah. I guess when we're talking about getting lost as well, you know, a lot of the things we know goes out the windows in our, you know, when we lose the balance of our mind.
Yeah.
Absolutely, so we're panicking. Absolutely, we know this, you know. That's the point, really. It's like, you're not learning anything new. We know this. We're programmed with this. This is already part of who we are, but it's never really been nurtured, you know, and we've never really needed it. You know, even now, especially, you can just ask your phone to take you anywhere and it'll just talk back to you.
I don't like that because I feel like I can find my way around without it, and I'll lose a skill if I just rely on Google Maps to tell me every move. Maybe I shouldn't worry, but this is how I feel.
Yeah, for sure. But I mean, it's something within us, and the quieter our mind is, and the more we trust in ourselves, the more you'll surprise yourself with what you're actually capable of doing. And I guess it's as much breaking down those boundaries which stop you from, you know, accessing these skills that we have, than it is actually learning things.
We should run a competition who can walk the straightest line down a rugby field.
Interesting, eh? Have you ever done it? Have you ever tried it? Everyone should try.
Not that, no.
I'd love to see, throughout the summer, random people blindfolded walking across the rugby field. Let's make it happen, Raglan.
Well, the people who live there are looking over the field will be like, oh, there's another one.
Yeah, I mean, you learn a bit about yourself doing that. And another good thing to practice is sort of judging distance. And if you're being very scientific, you know, some people, like if you do more sort of military training, you'd know how many steps it's going to take you to walk a kilometre, you know, with your stride, and that would be useful information in that realm.
I got quite accurate stepping out soccer fields for a while.
Oh, yeah?
Just working out what a metre step was and somehow managing to do it. You know, I'd be within half a metre at the end of the field. Like I'd done quite well. But for a kilometre, that's a whole other story.
Yeah, just knowing what your stride is, or even just, you know, some people would measure their stride. Because if you're in the bush, you get a lot of supplejack vines.
Well, it's easy on a flat grass field,
so,
or on a road.
If you are wanting to head west,
yeah,
there'll be obstacles, there'll be steep bits, and so you want to go north for a few hundred meters to avoid it, and then west, and then you're going to have to amend yourself to come back down south. So, you know, being able to judge that distance helps your accuracy with that. And another good practice is, and you don't need to do this on a big, you can do this over 5 or 10 meters, but if you're blindfolded and you have an object in front of you, walking, not something that you're going to smash into, maybe something on the ground, stick on the ground or something, is just walking towards that and stopping at it without seeing it. And, you know, do you stop before, do you stop after it? How good are you actually judging that distance? And trying to do that logically and thinking and trying to picture where you are and trying to do it by feel and maybe feeling the energy of the object and knowing when it's there's a lot to be learned in these little practices.
I feel like I could do, if it was close, if it was like 10 meters away, I could keep a visual image of my mind where I was, but if it was a lot further than that, I don't think I'd be able to do it very accurately at all.
Something to practice at home as well. And I get the kids, we do a lot of what's called fox walking, so, you know, when I'm in the bush, I'm always trying to fox walk and walk like the animal that I actually am, and you know, follow the rules of nature. And
just remind people what fox walking is.
Fox walking is the term given to when you step and you put the front of your foot down without committing weight. So I guess if you're walking on sharp gravel, you know, you'd kind of almost naturally do this anyway.
Yeah.
Especially if you weren't looking at what you were walking on. You know, you don't want to just commit with your heavy foot, which is what we do when we walk with shoes.
Yeah.
You want to feel out, make sure it's safe to commit your weight first. And by doing this, you can have a very little disturbance on the ground, very little impact, very little pressure, very little sound, and therefore very little impact on how nature's hearing you. Because when you're in nature, it's as much a sound as it is a sight. You know, we're so visually dominated, but when I'm in the bush, it's almost my second sense, really, my vision. I just let that soften right off. And
except really our brain is paying attention to sound, and we do pick up things from that, the sound around us, but we don't consciously process it. It's just there, and we just notice there's something, if something's changed. And I'm just talking about, like, you could tell if a door was open or closed in a room to the outside, because that's pretty obvious.
Yeah.
You know, if someone could open a door silently, you'd still know, and you'd go, something's changed. So yeah, we are taking in the information. It's just not that, say, like, the visual has such primacy. That's what we think about all the time.
But I guess what I'm finding, I mean, when you're in town, you know, a lot of places you walk into, you know, to shops and places in town and or busier places where there's generally a lot of noise. So your noise doesn't seemingly have as much as an impact or an importance. Yeah. But if you're somewhere quiet, like the bush, where one footstep actually, you know, if you're there, it's probably the noisiest sound that any of the birds are going to be hearing. Having a natural awareness of your own sound, I don't think is practiced very much. You know, we go to the bush and we like listening to, you know, we might be walking and listening, but you're listening to the bird song or the wind or the streams. But we tend to ignore our own footsteps, whereas everything else in the bush, that's probably the dominant thing everything else is hearing. So having awareness of what sound you're actually making is another really good thing to practice, and slowing down your step and trying to fox walk and be a bit quieter with that can actually really change your experience if you're just going on your daily little stroll. And it doesn't have to be in the bush, just anywhere. Me and Nick like to joke, we practice it in the library or the supermarket sometimes.
We're sneaking up on people.
just moving sort of silently and with awareness. It's good. It's not just good for your body, but it's good for your mind. You know, the brain waves that you're creating when you have an awareness. It's our way we're designed to move, and it's for our whole being. You know, it's really beneficial to practice.
If you do it in the bush, do you find that the birds don't stay so far away from you, or the animals don't stay so far away?
Yep. And I don't think
because you're not crashing around.
I mean, it's. When you're on the track in the bush, it's fairly easy to, you know, to not make much sound. But especially going into summer when things start crisping up, you know, and drying up, it's really hard to walk without a sound. And that's not just true of humans. You know, if you're around a goat or any other mammal in the bush, you know, none of them are going to be that silent in summertime. It's hard for all. But just having awareness, just knowing what sound you're making and why you're making that sound. And then you start getting to know certain trees by the sound of their leaves and which ones are going to make a lot of noise and which ones aren't. And then that starts dictating the path that you want to take. And probably not just true of humans again, probably true of animals. So then you're going into the realm of tracking. And if you're tracking an animal, you start to get more of a feeling of what it's like to be that animal, which gives you an advantage of trying to find that animal, because you understand its decisions it's going to make a bit more.
Have you tried tracking animals?
I love tracking animals, yeah.
With no particular... Your goal is just to track?
Yep, just to learn. And, you know, half the time I won't find the animal, but I'll be finding, you know, finding signs and finding tracks and just learning and always asking, you know, why did it suddenly turn direction here? Why did it suddenly stop here? You know, what's it eating there? What's freaked it out here? How many were there? Just unfolding the story, which is really for me what tracking is about, is deciphering a story, the story of the animal.
Why do you want to do all this? The big question. Because you could just stay at home on the couch.
I could just stay at home because it gives me a real, you know, ever deepening sense of belonging and connection to the world that, you know, we were blessed to be born in. And you know, I really strongly feel that these practices are a huge remedy. It's something that we're really lacking, something that is a huge part of who we are, but we're increasingly losing touch with. And you know, in a world where there's huge epidemics of depression and anxiety and loneliness, and you know, so many struggles which people are facing, I feel strongly that this is a big way to remedy that. You know, if you're friends with nature and you're absolutely comfortable in nature and you feel absolutely you belong in nature, and I don't just mean nature of the bush, nature everywhere, you know, it's everywhere, then loneliness is never going to be an issue for you. You know, you're going to feel that support. You know, one issue is being seen, I think, and actually being acknowledged and seen as a person and your struggles, and nature will always see you and accept you. And we don't always find that in the human world. So I feel it's a very healing place to be, and the practices, and the deeper we connect with nature, the deeper we can heal the things which challenge us.
I think we've insulated ourselves from the world and made everything so comfortable. You know, like we're comfortable shoes. We don't have to think about when we're walking and we drive. We get into our car in our garage and drive to the parking garage or the place in the office we work. This is the extreme version. And because you don't have to think about anything you're doing consciously, you're just left with what's going on inside your brain the whole time. And that's when you start obsessing about things and ruminating on things.
Yeah.
And I've said this a lot, that the most chill time of my life, the time when I was the most chill, was when I was rock climbing regularly.
Yeah.
Because that is an all, your whole being is required for rock climbing. You know, all your senses are working really hard, and you might have to like motivate yourself, or a little bit of your internal courage is required. Not always, because rock climbing doesn't have to be dangerous, but it's a full body, full being, full spirit kind of activity.
Practicing it regularly, though, did you find that you were able to rock climb comfortably?
Every rock climb has a grade, so it's easy to do. It's easy to do it comfortably.
Yeah.
You just look. You go for, oh, that grade's easy for me, I'll climb that.
Yeah.
But also, some people go deliberately to push themselves. But even I wasn't someone who was out there to push myself. But every now and again, I would want to do something that was a challenge. I just would feel the urge to do that.
Yeah.
And also, an easy climb is a boring climb as well.
Yeah.
You know, there's the ones that are too hard and you can't do, and that's also, that's a non-event, a non-experience, and then the ones that are so easy that it's like climbing a ladder, and it's like, well, I didn't drive out here to climb a ladder. So there is a level of challenge that, or a level of intrigue, I think, that you're after.
The reason I ask is because ultimately comfort is really what I'm, you know, hoping to find, you know, comfort in being in nature and having that skill set. And how I move, and you know, I mean, you get that on the night walk. You know, after a while, after kicking a few rocks and things, you no longer need to really pay attention to your feet because they're doing it anyway. So whereas we can wear shoes and we get that instant comfort, I kind of feel we can still attain that level of comfort by, you know, practicing these older ways, but. There's a journey to get there, and I think that journey is what's missing, and that journey is what's asking us to practice awareness and you know, be curious and to learn and to understand things during that journey. So ultimately, I think, you know, that comfort will come whichever path you take, whether you've got your couch and your thick-soled shoes, but the skill set which will be nurtured in that journey is what's really going to serve you for the rest of your life.
I guess the connection I was making was between, like, we're so intellectual as a culture. Well, not everybody is, but, well, no, I think everyone is compared to previous cultures on the planet, even the people who don't think they're very intellectual. We spend so much time in our own heads, and if you're completely insulated from the physical world, that just reinforces that getting lost in your own head kind of a thing, and you are connecting it with high rates of depression and mental illness, and I think that's kind of part of it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, and totally, you know, so many times, so many walks that I've been on when I'm following a track and I've got my shoes on. And it's so easy to not be aware, you know, to just be in my head, be thinking about things. Sometimes that's, you know, why people go on a walk, to create time for themselves to,
well, yeah, some people,
to catch up,
yeah,
with their thoughts.
Some people need that too, and it serves a purpose. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Alrighty. Well, we've reached, we've gone past 10 o'clock, time to end the show. And we're not going to see you again in the studio till, I don't know, sometime next year.
Mm. Well, yeah, well, I've got a busy summer. And just before we leave,
oh, yeah,
I'd just like to put out there, I've you know, I'm trying to do this as personally as I can, so I haven't gone to the Raglan Notice Board with this yet. But I'm on the mission at the moment to expand what I do, big part of that, the biggest step really, is to find a new piece of land do it from.
Yeah.
So I'm putting it out to the community, if you know, people have heard me on the show and align with what I do and what I offer and are keen to support. If anyone knows of a piece of land between here and, you know, Te Mata, Waitatuna, just within probably this side of the divvy, which has decent access to a bit of bush where our kids can continue their journey, and I'm able to offer a lot more workshops to adults and to everyone really, and continue my work. If anything comes to mind, then try and hunt me down, or maybe can they get in touch with the radio?
Yeah, yeah. Like, all our details are on the website, reglanradio.com. So that's usually how people get in touch with us. Yeah,
and, yeah. That'd be really grateful for any support or ideas people would have.
I mean, kind of how much space?
Probably. Yeah. I mean, you know, an acre minimum, probably. You know, place to explore
and not bare land, because it's not quite gonna.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, not bare land, a bit of bush, you know, if we're going to be practicing some nature craft and you know, connecting with the bush, that's probably an important factor. And yeah, probably, you know, something fairly quiet would be nice to give the feel that you're not in a wilder place.
Not next to State Highway 23.
Yeah.
Then.
But any, you know, I'll look at anything. At the end of the day, it's based on, you know, the land will speak. And something will feel like the right thing, and it will all fall into place, I'm sure.
Yeah, okay. All right, Rob, thanks for coming in.
Cool. Cheers, Aaron.
All right, time to go. As I said, end of the show for the day. I'll be back again tomorrow.